He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our listeners for this week's Car Keys show with Mike, Robin, and Jay. And I'd like to start this week's show by discussing an event that I ran into on a highway drive to down in New York State recently. And this comes back to the whole thing we talk about often on these shows about focusing your vision on the road and paying 130% or more attention to the driving part of your life as opposed to being distracted by anything that can distract you from looking at the road. And it went like this. I was stopped at a couple of stoplights on a Route 22 road in New York recently, and they went green, and I didn't get through the first change. The line was so long, and I went green again, and I heard a roar, and I looked around to find the roar, to find a motorcyclist coming up facing on the lane opposing me, accelerating mightily on a motorcycle with his front wheel high in the sky off the road. And he was riding basically on his seat on one tire. And all I could think about was, what happens if that motorcyclist were to lean one way or the other? Because I do not know how a motorcycle can go down a road straight without possibly veering very easily off course and possibly creating a quite damaging accident with oncoming traffic. Jay, what do you say about that?
Well, I know of one stunt cyclist named Sarah Lacido. It's a lot of fun to watch all her YouTube videos, and she can do all of that. But I don't think you should recommend doing that on public roads.
Correct.
I think the point here is, and Robin, you're absolutely right, it's driving school 101, it's racing school 101, it's advanced driving courses 102, whatever. Keep your eyes looking up and down the
forward.
Road. Forward. I mean, for those of us who do sports like skiing, riding horses, cycling, I mean, this is what we teach you too, is you know, look ahead, but also look around you. You have to have situational awareness, right? So you're not only looking ahead, but you're also looking in your mirrors. Recently, I had another incident, an almost incident with a motorcyclist. I was in traffic somewhere down in the New York City metro area. I can't even remember if I was in the middle lane or the left lane. I usually tend to be in the left lane. But like Robin, I heard a roar, and before I knew it, someone had, you know, split the lane and passed me on the right. And by the way, it is totally legal in New York. I don't know about Connecticut, but lane splitting, as it is called, is becoming legal in more and more states. It's dangerous. We can debate whether motorcyclists should be splitting lanes, but the fact of the matter is, it is legal. I understand why they're doing it, and we do have to be aware of that. And you know, keep our eyes peeled and our ears peeled too.
Yes, exactly. Both points, because lane splitting is more audible possibly before you might see it if you were in one of two lanes or three lanes of traffic going the same direction and stuck in a very slow moving traffic pattern, as can happen on 684, Jay. You know that in morning rush hour and in evening rush hour, depending on which direction you're going. And motorcyclists can do this because they are on two wheels, no width except for their bodies, basically, and the handlebars on a motorcycle, and they do it to get ahead of the traffic that is going along maybe at 20 miles an hour or thereabouts, but well below the speed limit. And they can wiggle between these lanes, and it is a very dangerous condition, much like the one I started out with, but it happens much more often.
And take that to another level, because these motorcycles, you hear them usually if they have, you know, exhausts that are not quite legal, which actually helps in this case. But if you're driving in the city, you have cyclists and e-bikes, and I'm sure Robin's going to pick up on that, that are doing the same thing. And e-bikes, especially, are really quick. And it's not just in the city. Now, you know, I'm going on a tangent here, but I was driving in our neck of the woods just over the weekend, and some kid on an e-bike was going left and right and on the road and off the road and back on the road. And the speed at which these bikes are traveling is concerning. I mean, when you're going 25, 30 miles an hour on what still looks like a bicycle with limited protection, they do have bicycle helmets. But the fact of the matter is, they're just very unpredictable, and usually ridden by kids who have no formal education in driving or riding.
Well, experience in riding them, yes. Very good points to start this show off with, but it does bring us back to the emphasis of keeping your eyes on the road, moving them around front, sideways, and having good hearing, hopefully, because this is the kind of interference in traffic that we are seeing increasing, especially with the e-bike rage that's happening. And e-bikes are going dangerously fast. I think anything over 20 miles an hour on a bike is pretty fast. Pedalists can do that. And this weekend, or on any given weekend in the fall, bicycles are out in crowds or herds or whatever you call a pack. I guess packs of riders. Very often, I ran into two or three packs down in Fairfield County over the weekend that before the show was done, and there were 6 to 8 bikes in 3 packs, and they were on 2-lane roads. That's 1 lane each way, and some of them had blinking lights, which gave you a very good visual alert that they were there, and some of them didn't. And those that didn't, when you're in shadows in a cloudy day, for example, on a 2-lane road that's often over has trees with branches over it, you can't see these bicyclists. And they weren't electric. They were pedals, and they were going very quickly because these guys are in shape. And so there it is for the safety tip, which we started this show off with. I want to go on to a couple of new vehicles that we have talked a bit about, but not much, and Jay, I hope, will chime in. One is the new Scout. Left off that name is the International, which used to be the International Scout that we all know used to exist back in well into middle of last century. And it was a very good off-road. It was a Jeep-like vehicle, albeit a bit bigger than the Wrangler that was sort of the classic Jeep and still is, and the Broncos that were around then. And somehow VW has gotten the rights to use the name Scout, and VW is bringing out a whole new range. It's two vehicles right now called Scouts, and they're electric. I'm not sure what they do have a version of a power plant option that can extend the range. I do not know much about it, Jay. I don't think any are on the road other than maybe test beds, as we call them, vehicles that are pre-production that are out on the road sort of testing their features for the production test riders. I believe it started.
No. It's starting in 2026.
Okay.
And I honestly don't know if it's based on the same platform as like the Microbus. So I don't know if it's a truck platform.
Well, it's designed to be off-road capable like the Rivian, I think. And it doesn't really, I mean, it does have visual vestiges of the old Scout, but it's certainly not looking like the International Scout harvesters or however you want to call the old vehicles that we used to be seeing when they were in production in pure fossil fuel form back in the 60s and 70s. And I don't know when they stopped production of them, but that's one vehicle. The other one is the VW Bus, Volkswagen Buzz, which is all electric micro van. Well, not a micro anymore, but a van type of vehicle, which Car and Driver has done a quite an article on, Jay. You may have read it.
I did not.
It's not the same as my Eurovan. It heralds back to the older versions of the microbuses of the 50s and 60s.
In looks only. I mean, it's a brand
new... In looks only, correct.
It's an electric vehicle based on...
It's thoroughly modernized.
The ID4 and whatever the platform name is for that Volkswagen and Audi use for a bunch of electric vehicles.
Well, the reviews are positive. They look neat. They're going to be expensive, so it's not going to be an easy vehicle for much of the population who will probably love it to buy unless they've got deep pockets. It's a very heavy vehicle, Jay. As you have said, is the case with most electric vehicles compared to fossil fuel vehicles of similar size, mostly due to the battery packs that are very weighty, I guess. I think the Eurovan is weighing in at like 6,500 pounds or thereabouts. That's over 2 tons. That's 3 tons. And, of course, the more weight you have, the less range you get. And since Buzz is only going to be electric, it's going to be, to a certain degree, range limited for those who want to do driving in different ways than electric vehicles are right now not really adequate for.
So I want to talk a little bit about hybrids, but not
okay.
in the usual sense that we think of as hybrids, you know, cars that are gasoline-powered cars, and then we add a little battery pack and a little motor, and we're talking more about range extension and complicated powertrains. Whether it's from Toyota, Volvo, Mercedes, all of the manufacturers. But more in the industrial world, and I was just reading an article about a motorhome, and I know, you know motorhome season may be over, and I don't know how many people around this area actually travel in motorhomes, but it's kind of a big thing in the country.
The West.
And... the article was starting off by saying that you know most motorhomes are based on truck chassis that have really not evolved very much in the last 30, 40 years. And basically, when you're driving a Class A motorhome, you still have a big clunky V8 engine in the front, usually gas-powered, on a truck frame, and they don't really drive very well. The point of these vehicles is to get from one camping spot to another, if you will, and live in a house
on
in a
wheels.
Box. And this is a deal that Thor Industries, which is the leader one of the major manufacturers in campers and RVs, struck a deal with a company called Harbinger. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Harbinger. It's a startup in California, and what they've done is they produce hybrid vehicles on truck chassis. So, and this is to the point that electric batteries are well suited to be placed on truck chassis, which are really, dual rails, very simple looking dual rails, and you put the battery pack in the middle,
in between,
and the electric motor is usually pretty compact and goes over usually the rear wheels or rear wheels and front wheels. And what this company has done is add a little four-cylinder gasoline engine that rides in the way back near the rear axle of the vehicle. So it's all the battery pack, the electric motor, and the small four-cylinder engine all sit between these rails.
The rails.
And they to make a long story a little shorter, they have the four battery packs that are similar to the one in a model Tesla 3, and they have an electric motor of about 400 horsepower, and the idea is that they run that four-cylinder engine all the time. So as soon as you start driving, that engine is running at a constant 4,000 RPM, and the vehicle has a 500-mile range as it is, with the engine running and the electric motors. And that's way more than enough for...
the average day.
Yeah, average day, especially in a big RV. And, you know, you get to a camping site, you can recharge them. You get to they recharge in a fast charging station. I think you can charge up to 90% in an hour's time, a lot like an electric car. And what this company is doing is also installing these packages, or the plan is to install these packages in you know, delivery vehicles. And I think there's a huge, a great future for these types of vehicles, and that's the short version of it.
Small
engine, and the engine is just a generator. It's not trying to, you're not going from being a gas-powered vehicle to an electric vehicle to back and forth. No, the gas engine is just a generator, and you power, you know, you're just powering the battery pack.
Well, the wheels are all powered by the electric motors, is what you're telling us.
Yes.
And I also know that there were a couple of developments along this line with large vehicles hauling a trailer which contained batteries. And so you had an electric line hook up between the trailer, which also had, I don't know whether they were supplemental battery packs to the ones that might already be under the frame rails of the large vehicle that was towing this trailer, but that was also an alternative range extender situation, but it would seem like the little four-cylinder generator engine would be more convenient because, of course, you could fill the tanks that power those with gasoline or diesel, however they're running, and then you have all the stations available to stop and get those refueled in a much quicker fashion than trying to recharge the batteries. Which the generator is actually charging to keep the electric motors running until those 500 miles that you say are the ranges that you can get with these vehicles are finished. So good for them. I wonder what they cost.
RVs are not inexpensive, let's put it
this way. No, RVs are not. I mean, there are $500,000 motorhomes running around without any electrical supplemental power packs right now, as far as I know.
Well,
and,
again,
of course, they're highly, you know, they're luxuriously equipped vehicles, versions of the vehicles. But you've got also campers in the backs of pickup trucks, and that's where you're not going to see an electric pickup truck probably hauling a 1,000-pound pickup bed camper when filled with people or filled with the equipment inside them. And,
no, but you would think that adding an electric, a gasoline, a small gasoline engine to a pickup truck, you know, same idea, pickup truck has dual rail chassis. It should be fairly easy to add a small gasoline engine.
Jay, that's going to be the Scout situation. That's the Scout answer to the range anxiety that the Scouts would have without whatever their little range extender generator is going to be. And that's going to be part of an option package for the Scouts. All these manufacturers, whether it's the new Ram pickup, I think, has got something like that coming along, too. So there's a lot of discussion about how to extend the range of the baseline electric vehicles beyond their current 215 to 315 seemingly advertised ranges, depending on the size of batteries and whether you've got two motors or three motors or whatever powering the vehicles and how much they weigh.
Yeah, I'm looking here at Winnebago. They have one that's not on the market yet, but fully operational, the ERV2.
Yep.
Which they've built that on a Ford E-Transit chassis.
Yep.
They're saying 108 miles is the range. What the hell good is that?
Not very good. that barely gets you to New York.
Why would you
leave from Great Barrington, Massachusetts?
Yeah, why would you even try and sell something like that?
I don't know that
ridiculous.
You should.
Ridiculous.
They're the ones that should have.
And then if you've got to put gasoline booster engines into these things.
They're the ones that should either have an electric trailer package towing behind
Ford
instead of a Jeep
Ford
vehicle.
Ford is well equipped to put a small engine. I mean, they have, you know, in Europe they have these, actually, I don't know if they still sell them here in any car, but they have a 3-cylinder, 1-liter engine that they put in a bunch of little micro cars in Europe, and they could definitely add that to an E-Transit. I mean, the E-Transit was designed to be a deliver a last-mile delivery vehicle, and those things do 100, 150 miles a day, period. It's like a mail vehicle, you know. You deliver mail, you can very well do that with an electric vehicle.
To Mike's comment, the Winnebago, which is not a mail delivery vehicle, it's a camper line of vehicles, only being able to go 108 miles is similar to the problem of a pickup truck towing a 10,000 pound trailer behind it. And neither of those make electric vehicles doing that kind of service appropriate for market, as far as I'm concerned.
No, not at all. Be taking a trip to Kent Falls from here, that's it. Hope they get a plug down there.
I hope they do too. Jay, what else do you have to go on?
I'm a Porsche fanatic, and I was down in the southern part of the state doing an event at a Porsche shop this weekend, and I think I told you a little bit about that. And it is amazing to see what you can find in some shop that looks like nothing from the outside, and inside you are looking at several, like $4 or $5 million Porsches in various stages of being maintained or reconditioned. And it's just pretty cool. And there are a lot of good shops out there.
Tucked away in alleys, Jay. Apropos of that is the Bricklin experience that many listeners heard about over a year ago. And when my Bricklin was when I was called to come down and retrieve my restored Bricklin, that's exactly the kind of shop I found in a back alley near Danbury, Connecticut. And they had no signage out. The building looked like it could have been an apartment building with a big garage in the bottom. And when they let you in, there was a spotless service area in the garage zone of this building. The floor you could, eat off of, painted and everything else, and it was spotless. But you never knew, you never would have experienced. And then there was a Ferrari, which is there for some client to be thoroughly serviced or restored or modified alongside my Bricklin.
Which you should have kept and turned into an electric vehicle is my...
Thank you very much, Jay, for that. I hope the public who's listening thinks that it was a good idea, too, but I didn't. And as it was not functioning as a fossil fuel Bricklin either at that juncture because the engine hadn't been checked out to see whether it was even serviceable, having been drained of coolant for approximately 20 years it sat in that garage. Anybody wants to know about it, just go online or YouTube and check out the Bricklin restoration. And if you haven't already seen it, listeners, you'll have a good laugh.
I'm still laughing.
Yes, you are.
On a more serious note, back to traveling our roads here. It is fall season, and there are a lot of maintenance vehicles on the roads.
Yes, there are.
Some of you are listening to us. We do understand you need to be able. You can't always park in a driveway when you are, doing whatever you're doing at a property. But try to keep those vehicles not on the crest of a hill, not on, coming out of a turn.
Some are not even putting on their safety, blinking lights, the flashers, which really makes me angry. And to that point, I have noted that some of the newer cars these days, I do not know whether you used to be able to go to a cocktail party with the old days and park on a side of a town road, dirt or whatever, and you could put your flashers on, and assuming the battery was in good condition, the flashers would flash until you came out to turn them off at the end of a party, which could sometimes go to 3 hours or more.
That depends on
how good the
party is.
Interior lights now go off. If you leave the door open or you leave the back hatch open, everything will turn off in approximately 20 minutes to avoid battery drainage. I do not know whether the emergency flashers are connected to that timing or not. But if so, you no longer have a car in the new cars these days that you can park on the side of a road with the flashers on unless you have a very strong battery in case, or even if you did, because if they're on a timer like the rest of the interior lights are in a car, and even the radios, you would not have them flashing when you came out at the end of a party, and hopefully the car would not have been hit by somebody driving along the road and not seeing it.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.